remember.
I'd like to call the Senate Committee on Human Services and Early Childhood Development. Early Childhood, I forget, there's not another word there. Call it to order. The first order of business, we will be talking about tax credit review process. And would Chris Allenock come up and Deanna Mack, please? What are you laughing at?
Well, she looks surprised.
Oh. You weren't supposed to come?
I laugh a lot anyway.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Chris Allenack, the Legislative Revenue Office. I'm going to be kind of brief because I think everybody has heard this little tax credit spiel. All the members have heard it in a different committee. So as to not waste everybody's time, I'll be very brief about it. This is a new stage in the tax credit review process for the legislature, where LRO was given additional staff person. So this session, I am visiting and following all the tax credits while in the tax policy or in the policy committees to provide whatever assistance I can at the chair and committee's pleasure with the policy review of the said tax credit. So you have a handful of tax credits in the committee now. So the overarching goal is to be as clear as possible about a policy intent behind any tax credits that the chair and the committee would like to continue. And the importance of that is once the policy framework is set in place, and it doesn't necessarily have to be in statute, but once that policy framework, the policy goals are clear, then the tax credits can be evaluated and analyzed and estimates made as to how successful they have been in achieving those goals, with the ultimate objective being the legislature would presumably only maintain policies that are effective to their intended purposes. So there is a tax credit report that LRO put out, and it is on the 18 tax credits that sunset this session. I think excerpts of it have been uploaded into OLIS and provided to you for the tax credits that are in front of you today, as well as in over the next couple of weeks. I think there are some scattered tax credits. So that's a Cliff Notes of a Cliff Notes of a Cliff Notes version.
Very good. So. Ma'am?
I'm Deanna Mack with the Department of Revenue, and I'm here just to answer any questions you have about our administration of the tax credits that are before you. If you do have any as we discuss them, I'm available for the committee.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Senator Cruz?
At this point, no.
Senator Moore Sanderson?
Well, not yet.
I will want to, Mr. Chair, when we have two similar ones, just be very clear on what the extension is in the second one. So,
if there's no further questions, I'll close the informational meeting, and we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 49 and Senate Bill 212.
And there are no witnesses signed up.
And would anybody like to talk on Senate Bill 49 and 212? Well, you guys are making my job so easy.
I can summarize, sir.
Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll do them each in turn. Senate Bill 49 is the bare extension of the sunset for the tax credit for contributions to the Office of Child Care. Senate Bill 212 goes a bit further. It extends the sunset for the tax credit for contributions to the Office of Child Care, but it also increases the annual limit on the amount of the credit from $500,000 to $2.5 million. It removes the requirement to select and use tax credit marketer. It removes the requirement to select and distribute monies to community agencies, and instead it requires distributions to child care providers according to rules adopted by the Early Learning Council. It also sets application to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2016, and takes effect on the 91st day after signee die. So it goes a little bit further than Senate Bill 49.
Okay,
so
we're on 49 now?
Or both.
Both together, yes, 49
yeah,
and 212.
I'm just, what I would like to know is who uses it and how much money. Do we have that?
Chris, do you have that information?
Mr. Chair. Senator Amanda Sanderson, for the record, Chris Allenack, Legislative Revenue Office. for the Office of Child Care Contributions. This is one of the tax credits where taxpayers, and they can be any taxpayer who make a contribution to the office, can get a tax credit worth 75% of their contribution. So just to use round numbers, a taxpayer can provide a $100,000 contribution to the office, and they will get a $75,000 tax credit. They do not have to be the consumers of child care. They don't even have, there doesn't have to be any connection between the two, which is a little unusual. They're, generally, tax credits, there's a nexus between the person receiving the credit and the people who are the beneficiaries of the policy. The state does, however, have a handful of credits that are like this, where a contribution is made to a fund, and simply by making that contribution, there's a tax mm-hmm. credit. It's an incentive to contribute to that fund, or in this case, an office. And then the office or the fund get used for other public policy purposes and provide other beneficiaries.
And it says that this tax credit has increased from $0.4 million to under $0.8 million, $800,000. And how many individuals use that then? Is it just a couple?
I believe it was fewer than 100, and I can confirm that.
Yeah, no, that just gives me a ballpark. So, what again is unusual about it? That I mean, could we recommend that they actually have a rather than just using it as a loophole to save some money?
Well, the part of the idea behind this seems to be it's a funding mechanism for the office in part. I don't know exactly how the office uses the money that they receive or if it's earmarked. I'm still working on getting those details.
Okay.
But it's a different, rather than, so you, to fund the office, you can have the usual way is a direct appropriation to fund an office. In this case, part of the funding is coming from a tax credit. I mean, it is as direct as that. There doesn't have to be a nexus between, they don't have to consume child care.
Well, it sure would be nice to know what kind of people do that. And is there someone from the Office of Child Care here?
I am.
Oh, cool.
Would you like to come up and answer those questions? Thank you. Didn't expect that, did you?
No. It's always the risk.
Please identify yourself.
Good afternoon, Chair Olson and members of the committee. My name is Kelly Walker. I'm the Director of Child Care Licensing and Subsidy for the Office of Child Care, the Early Learning Division. So in kind of in a nutshell, the folks who donate, and I actually have a list of the numbers of individuals. We have private individuals, corporations, and stock donations that can go up to $500,000 in any given year. And all of that funding is passed through our office and goes to support child care providers, small businesses who care for families, children, for education awards, and also as supports for quality child care. And that's primarily what the fund is for.
So it goes to the providers and not the children?
It goes directly to the small businesses, the child care providers. It can also go to workers in child care facilities. So if they attain certain education levels, our Center for Career Development can award. It's kind of like a additional wage supplement because they're very low-paid workers. But it's an education stipend. And I don't have the number of individuals that it serves throughout the year, but I'd be happy to go back and get some information and really break down what the award
so
does.
Is there any is there any of this money that's being used for administration of the office?
No, we had originally, and it's taken out of the bill now, but we accessed someone to help us market. But it's such a, it was a small fund, and we had pretty much a similar donations, and the same folks would donate over the years stocks. And so we haven't needed to do any marketing for this fund.
And did someone audit your books? Audit
the money as it comes in?
And as it comes in, we have a mechanism to track the funding that comes in, and I believe, I mean, Department of Revenue. There's I don't know the specifics, but it's all on the.
Well, the only reason I'm asking, I mean, we so want everyone to be accountable for the money that's going to the various places.
Yeah, there's a very rigid structure for our tax credit system. I'm just not the one who administers it, so I don't know all the details, but I'd be happy to have that information come back to you and show you the structure that's used and the accountability, and then how all the funding it go. There's a variety of contractors that we use that award the education awards to the child care providers once they've hit certain education, and then also providers who are accessing our or who are joining our quality rating and improvement system. So if they reach a certain level of rating, they might get some incentive and support money to help them with their facilities.
Just follow up then?
Please.
Yeah. So you, if you were audited by the state and you then could show how many people, how much money came in.
Yep.
And then specifically
and who it came from.
And who it came from, yeah. But then where that money was directed.
Yes.
Yeah. To which?
Yeah, it comes in. It's our other funds. We have general funds, federal funds, and other funds, and it's part of our other fund accounting, and it's all, tracked.
Thank you.
Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you. And Senate Bill 212, Section 3, it looks like you're changing some of the criteria.
Yes.
Why?
Well, it was initiated as a pilot back, and again, I would need to look at my notes, 2001, and there were some things that they thought would work that they realized that it just wasn't scalable with the amount of money. I think part of what they wanted to do was to, you know, increase rates to child care providers and be more of assistance to families with child care subsidies, and there's just not enough funding in a $500,000 tax credit to do that. So that went away fairly early on in the pilot, and then the other piece is a marketing portion.
Right. Well, I mean, in Section 4, you're just reordering things, but in Section 5, you're making some actual changes in criteria. So.
And since this fund came into being, we've moved from Department of Employment to Department of Education, so the Early Learning Council is now the entity that kind of guides our policy.
Yes.
And that was different than when the tax credit came into being.
So have you run up against the $500,000 limit at any point in time?
We meet it almost every year. I think one year during an early recession, we didn't meet it, but we pretty much make the $500,000 every year.
All right.
Senator Denver.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So just following up, so presumably there's a policy decision that we can get more money into this fund by getting people to contribute and then giving them a tax credit than a direct allocation. And presumably it's an allocation we would want to make, and this is presumably saving the state some dollars. So what is the differential, again, Chris, between what we're getting in terms of contributions into the fund versus, what we're losing in taxes?
So for Chair Olson, Senator Denbrough, so for the $500,000 cap, if that's the contribution, then they would get a 75, if that were done just for simple, it's one person, $500,000, they would get a 75% credit. So I believe that's $375,000.
So we're a net gain of $125,000.
Because the credit percentage is less than 100, there's a net gain. And it's conjecture on my part, but I believe that's part of the reason behind setting it up that way, because there is, at least on those dollars. Now, whether or not the $500,000 is sufficient for the intended purposes is a different question.
But it's not that simple, because that's 75% of whatever they're not paying taxes on, so we're losing. And I'm assuming most of those are at the 9%, so we're losing that money as well, correct? Because the state's not collecting that.
The state won't collect. The taxpayers will get the tax credit.
Right, which will mean that the state will not collect that much in taxes.
Correct.
Right.
So it's not
just a differential in the percentage. There's also the taxes not received by the state, so it's a decrease in state revenue. It's a tiny little thing, but...
That's absolutely correct. It's the difference between direct... Some of the terminology is direct spending versus indirect spending.
Okay.
Is how, you know, trying to use charged terms.
Right.
But...
Is there any other questions? Ms. Walker, I have one for you. Do you have a preference between 49 or 212?
49 removes the sunset. 212 changes the cap. So they kind of go hand in hand.
Okay.
And I do have some little tax credit summary informational piece that I can make sure that you get.
Would you send that to the...
Yes.
To Sarah,
I'd be happy to.
Senator Gelser?
Ms. Chair, it's not quite that simple. That's you're accurate in that, but 212 raises the cap and extends the sunset.
Correct.
Okay, which means, okay, we're making these changes, and so we're extending the sunset to see how these changes work. So I don't think... From my perspective, it'd be an either or, and at this point, I think I'd take 212. And then, you know, that way we got to come back and revisit. So,
but we're not changing the cap, are we?
If we in 212, we are.
But from what to what now? I'm still trying.
From 500,000 to 2.5 million.
And Chris, I mean, I support the Office of Child Care. But I had heard that we are actually giving out more tax credits to people than the revenue that we take in now. I had heard that.
Chair Olson, Senator Montes-Anderson, I think that concept comes from the tax expenditure report, which totals everything up. For you, all of that, you have the income taxes and the property taxes. And I don't have the report in front of me, but for the 13-15 biennium or the 15-17 biennium, there'll be an estimate of the revenue coming into the state and the amount of total tax expenditures. That includes federal exclusions, all kinds of deductions, subtractions, basically exclusions, deductions, and tax credits. So it's not just tax credits. That concept encapsulates the entire tax code, with a lot of that being exclusions. And that was in the neighborhood. I have it. It's in that report, but going off my memory, it was around $12 or $13 billion in all income tax expenditures. And half of that are due to a concept of federal exclusions, which are, in very brief terms, pieces of income that the feds don't tax. And because we tie to federal tax law, we don't tax that either. But tax credits are a smaller subset of that.
Mr. Chair.
Sure.
So we have a sense, you know, again, looking at 212 with the higher amount, that there's that much demand, you know, that we would be able to get contributions up to that limit? I'm just wondering, was that figure established by what we see as the need, or
I think it was a best guess about what we could possibly expect over a period of years. I would anticipate that the first couple of years that it was in place, we would not get anywhere near that. I think it was our best guess.
And then if you were to move forward with that in the revenue impact that I would try to put on, I would talk to the Office of Child Care to try and get a sense of the demand, because this kind of tax credit is different from tax credits that are designed to an incentive for a certain kind of behavior. So this tax credit falls into a category where the state has 3, 4, 5 tax credits that are simply write a check to this entity and then you get a tax credit. So from the consumer of the tax credit, they may not care if the check is to the Office of Child Care or to the Office of Film and Video or to some other entity. If all they're concerned about is their bottom line tax situation. Their accountant will come to them and say, hey, here's your tax situation. If you make this contribution, then this is the effect on your taxes. Now, there will be, however the office operates, and I haven't had a chance to talk to the office, but every state agency that has this kind of credit has some sense of the demand for that credit. There will be people for whom childcare is a very near and dear topic, and they will make that contribution. They won't make it elsewhere because, for whatever reason, their personal circumstance, the office of childcare or the issue of childcare is very near and dear to them, and so they will make that contribution.
I could follow up. And,
sure,
and so, and I have a couple of questions, actually. You know, first, how is it in their financial interest to, you know, to make that contribution since they're only going to get a return of 75%?
That's a very good question.
And yet they are doing it.
Yet they are doing it. It could be that they were going to donate some money somewhere anyway. So that I, you know, I have $100,000. I'm going to donate it, and under stepping aside from the tax credits, I make a $100,000 donation to a charity. I get to deduct that off my federal taxes and my state taxes. And so, from that perspective, I know I'm going to write that check. Well, now if I write it to the Office of Child Care, just because that's the tax credit here, I also get the I get the deduction for the part that I don't get the tax credit for. I don't get to double dip. But now that return, from that perspective, my return is greater. There's also the situation of donated stock. And I'm not sure how much of the donations are in that sense. And now you get into some other tax planning that I'm kind of in the process of trying to figure out where it's to their advantage to do that kind of situation. But it could have to do with detailed tax planning related to stock.
Okay.
That's a guess at my point and an issue I'm still working
and
on.
Senator Dembro, Chair Olson, I couldn't speak to that part of it, but what I do know is that a number of the folks who do these donations to the office are passionate about early learning and good early learning environments for kids. And, you know, it's our mission to prepare children for kindergarten in whatever way we can, and the investments. There are people, a number of champions that invest year after year in this tax credit because of where the money goes.
And if I could follow up, and let me say I fully support this program and the use of these dollars to help move up the quality metrics in the different child care centers. In terms of the process that we're following with tax credits, you know, let's say hypothetically that the committee decides to send Senate Bill 212 then to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits, then it goes into the pool of, you know, if you know, let's say we're giving X million dollars. We've agreed we're going to give out X million dollars in tax credits. That means that some that we have now may be increased, or there may be new ones, and that it'll have to be countered by others going off the plate. How will you make the assessment for one like this, where, you know, currently it's $400,000, and you're looking at $2.5 million, but the $2.5 million may not all be used? I mean, that's your upward exposure, but how do you think you're going to make that calculation, Chris, or, you know, when you recommend to the committee?
The Chair Olson, Senator Dembro, it would be the result of conversations I would have with the Office of Child Care to get a sense for the demand. I mean, there could be some information where I'm convinced that it's the full $2.5 million. I might look at other tax credits where the take-up rate, so to speak, is a little bit less, and so maybe the revenue impact might be $2 million. It could phase in over time that, okay, so historically they're hitting the $500,000 mark, so maybe for the first couple of years it goes up by $250,000 a year, $500,000. It would be something that's a little bit of insight into the process that I would go through. I don't have a definitive answer, but I would look at those kinds of questions, and a lot of it would depend on the information that I could get from the Office of Child Care. Otherwise, I'm just going back to a pure kind of tax perspective. And then whatever that impact turns out to be for the Joint Committee on Tax Credits, as I understand the process now, the budget, if you will, they have is $14 million. They're going through a process, or they will be going through, it's the Revenue Committees will be going through a process of trying to find offsets to increase the amount that could be spent on the tax credits. So all of that, so they'll be going through that to see if they can increase that $14 million. And then depending on the sum of the total of tax credits that make it down to the committee, it becomes kind of a ways and means process where which ones have priority over the other. And this is a very difficult question because you could have child care, different kinds of child care, versus disability tax credits for some other kinds of tax credits. But it could also be a scaling effect where if just running with this tax credit, rather than the cap being $2.5 million, maybe it gets reduced down to $1.5 million to fit into that budget. There is one tax credit in a committee earlier this afternoon that didn't make it down to JTAX. The committee did not forward that one on. And so then that's a piece of savings, if you will, in terms of that budget.
An existing tax credit?
An existing tax credit that if it were to continue, it would have depending on the changes made, it might have had a revenue impact of $3.5 million. And that $3.5 million was part of the $64 million estimate that I made for extending all of them. So now, if that one's off the table, the $64 million spend just became $61 million. Rough math.
Thank you.
Senator, Ms. Sandman, do you have a question?
These people who take this tax credit, if we somehow didn't pass this bill and increase it to 2.5, these people would probably find another way to get a tax credit. Is that what I'm hearing?
It could be either way. If it's somebody who the child care is a passion, they may give to the office anyway. I mean, there's nothing stopping them from making donations to the office anyway. So they could go ahead and do that, and then they would get the state and federal deduction, which using round math is 10% rather than 75%. So the impact differential is
okay.
Right.
Okay.
Well, 10% off the state and then off the federal. So the tax credit is much more valuable. So that could tip people into putting money in here. But if it's a situation where I just go to my accountant and say, give me the best deal you can, then and I don't care about the policy behind it, then my dollars might go somewhere else.
Ms. Walker, I have a question for you. I'm sorry, Senator, are you done? If this was to go away, this tax credit was to go away totally, how do you think that'll reflect on the resources that come into you? Do you have an idea?
Well, Chair Olson, if these dollars go away, we have programs where we try and reward child care workers, early learning professionals for increasing their knowledge and skills in order to teach our youngest children. And if this money goes away, the incentives for all of that go away as well, because this funds the whole incentive program for getting higher credentials. The wave of the future in early learning is higher credentials, and it's not just out of high school and going to child care work anymore. And the importance of early learning is really significant. And we also use this funding for the supports and incentives for our quality environments. And as we look to the future, once our Race to the Top funding, which we have now, that is really putting us in a new, into a whole new future for early learning, once that funding goes away, this tax credit is the funding that's going to pay for those supports and incentives. So, you know, I could be dramatic and say it would be really devastating for our workforce, but it would have a serious and significant effect. A very little money, a bit of money, goes a long way for this workforce.
So basically then this is kind of like an advertising gimmick. Come in and spend your money, and you'll get a discount, which we do in retail all the time. Come in, there's a 20% coupon off if you buy. So you spend your money and you get a 20% advantage for it. In this case, it's a 75% advantage.
And look what great stuff we can do with your money.
Absolutely, which is exceptional. Now, if this money were to go away, would you come back to the and ask for general fund dollars?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't know that. It's policy. It would be a couple years off. So, you know, this it sunsets this year, and so, you know, we're looking to try and extend the tax credit so that we can do this work.
So this is a really important product for you guys.
Yeah. And we were talking about this morning, and it's like, you know, what we I don't know what we would do. I mean, there's only so many pots of money that come into the state to fund early learning.
Yes, Chair. Sir. Thanks. Yeah, actually, the chair reminds me, I mean, we're kind of going at this a little bit backwards because we haven't really talked about how the program, the general program of working with the child care centers and moving them up that, what's it called?
Well, there's a quality rating and improvement
The quality
system.
Rating
And there's
number.
Also the Center for Career Development to really get on the career ladder for early learning professionals.
Right. Yeah. And so we're asking child care centers to become better and
yeah.
to become more qualified.
Mm-hmm. And we want their employees to become
and
more qualified.
That's a really key part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the funds that come through this fund then help with that, right?
Directly.
To provide them some incentive to take that step, which is, in many cases, at considerable expense for the child care
yes.
center. Right?
Or to the individual.
Right. Yeah, at some point, I'd like to hear actually more of that, but I'm sure you're not going to schedule that hearing, Mr. Chair.
We
but
certainly
someone,
could.
I hope, will.
But I will pass that on so it gets scheduled so we can hear more about it.
Yes.
And Ms. Walker, if you wouldn't mind coming back to talk to us about it, it would be wonderful.
Or someone who could answer all your questions.
Senator
Thank
Mona
you,
Sanderson.
No, I was just going to agree that, you know, this is early childhood part of our committee, and certainly I don't have much experience with hearings on this kind of information.
And I guess I would add just part of the, I think, the intent behind this tax credit review process gets at this comparison between the direct and the indirect. And so in many ways, it is kind of backwards in that the question is, are these services of value and how valuable? And then, okay, then the question is, how does it, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But part of the intent here behind this, as I understand from leadership, is this comparison, because it's not pure tax policy.
And I will be sending additional information for you to review.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Great.
If there's no further questions, we will close public hearing on Senate Bill 49 and 212. I will interject at this moment. I was remiss to say that the chair is off on another committee assignment. She went to prison. she's with the Judicial Committee, I believe, and they're going over to the prison.
They're not going to the prison. They're going to McLaren.
Oh, they're going to McLaren. Okay. So she's not actually going to jail or is in jail.
Early childhood.
Later childhood. Yeah, children for sure.
Thank you very much. I'd like to now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 62, and we'll have a staff summary.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 62 prohibits tax credit for otherwise qualifying crop donation for any processed portion. It applies to tax years after January 1, 2016, takes effect the 91st day after sine die. This also has a subsequent referral to tax credits. The background is fairly brief. I'll read that as well. The current law permits a credit against individual or corporate taxes of 15% of the value of donated crops, regardless of whether any portion of the crop has been processed. This bill, Senate Bill 62, will disallow the credit for any portion of donated crops that have been processed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Counselor. Everybody's promoted today.
Yeah,
so because of that, I'm just going to call people at random to come up and talk about it. Would Philip Kennedy Wong, Katie Fast, and Amanda Dalton please come up? Thank you, and we'll do ladies first.
Okay.
Your choice, flip a coin.
That was not how we had it planned.
Go in the order you'd like, please.
No, it's fine. Good afternoon, Chair Olson and members of the committee. For the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau. Farm Bureau is in opposition of Senate Bill 62. And a little history, this deals with the farm produce tax credit that was actually just passed and reinstated last session, which gives farmers who are donating to a food bank the opportunity to get a 15% tax credit on the value of the crops that they're donating to their local food banks. This legislation just was enacted for the 2014 tax season, so we have not even compiled numbers on what the economic impact of those tax credits have been yet. And we believe it's too early to make changes to that program yet. We'd like to see it enacted and work through. We also have a grave concern about certain foods that would be eliminated from being donated and utilizing the tax credit because they have to be mildly processed before they can even be consumed. And that would include some examples, nuts that need to be shelled and roasted, dairy products that need to be pasteurized at the very least, meat that needs to be processed, and grains as some examples of those, but can also be included in vegetables that may be cut and frozen, would then be eliminated from use of the tax credit. So we would ask that you not move the bill on and just hold this one hearing. And I'm happy to answer any questions and turn it over to the food bank.
Chair Olson, the members of the committee for record, Philip Kennedy Wong. I do, Oregon Food Bank does share the same concerns that the Oregon Farm Bureau and many of our friends within the agricultural community with regards to Senate Bill 62. I think, you know, there are a lot of confusion as to what qualifies as a crop. And I think, you know, by having this bill, I don't think that we're quite ready to have that conversation as to what's considered a crop versus what's considered processed. And what Katie had mentioned as a good example, I mean, for example, if we get a donation of, say, like a live animal, which, you know, under the Crop Donation Tax Credit would be permitted. But as food banks, you know, we're not able to, you know, we don't have our own slaughter facilities. We don't cut and wrap livestock. And so by having, you know, a line in the sand between process and not process, it would really make the crop donation tax credit pointless because there are very few ranchers out there that, you know, are vertically integrated and they're able to do their own raising of the cattle and then slaughtering and cutting and wrapping. So I think for us that presents a lot of problems, especially as we look to grow the amount of donations that we're working to obtain from the Oregon agricultural industry. And we know there are a lot of willing farmers out there and ranchers that want to donate. And so by having this, you know, this definition, which I think is really arbitrary, can make it very, very problematic.
Mr.
Yes.
Even if you had a one-stop shop, a rancher who was going to slaughter his own animals, and that's still processing, you know. In the case of my farm, I pull my carrots out of the ground, I wash them and put them in a bag. I've processed them. So, you know, we need to be very careful. I mean, to a degree, that eliminates everything because everything has something done to it, so everything is processed. So definitions are really important here.
So. Mr. Wong, are you done?
I am. I do want to say one thing. I want to thank, though, Legislative Revenue and Department of Revenue because we've had extensive conversations with them about, you know, how we go about understanding what's a crop and what's not crops. I just want to put that for the record. We appreciate, you know, their willingness to work with us.
Can I just ask, and I don't know, maybe Amanda, you can answer this. Do you all have an idea of where this came from? Why are we seeking this change? Maybe somebody from LRO can. Yeah. Okay. Well, you don't have to do it yet, but
we'll bring you in. Yeah, Amanda, please.
Chair Olson, members of the committee, Amanda Dalton here today on behalf of the Oregon Wheat Growers League. Also joining in opposition of the bills drafted. Our primary concern, as has been stated, is as it affects us, it exempts local mills that are currently accepting our donated wheat, processing it, and then donating pancake mix. So a little bit about a program that we run called Bushels for Betsy. It allows wheat producers to join in the fight against hunger here in Oregon. Our wheat growers donate product, and last year donated over 200,000 pounds of pancake mix to the Oregon Food Bank. Processors are partners in our effort. They connect the dots between the grower and the hungry. And many ag products, as you've heard, and Senator Cruz mentioned, are required to be processed at some point to get to the hungry. The crop tax credit is a partner and a key effort in our donations. It was mentioned when we reinstated this last year that there was somewhat of a drop in donations, and so we know now is not the time. I think some of our numbers show over 260,000 people received a food bank box each month, and 35% of these are children. So we just urge the committee, now is not the time to lessen those efforts, and we encourage you to oppose this bill as drafted.
Are there any questions? Senator Moore, Sandra?
No, I understand the side of the thing, because I'm on this side. I want to know why. Well, I don't know the other side.
I have a question, Philip. I have a question for you. We recently were able to take salmon and bring those in and give those to the food bank, and they had to be processed, right? You guys can't clean them and fillet them, and this would not allow that to happen again, would it?
Chair Olson and members of the committee, for record, again, Philip Kennedy Wong. Yes, to a certain extent. It kind of depends on where the origins of the fish comes from. So we have a lot of what's called bycatch fish that has to be processed. So that's fish caught by commercial fisheries. And essentially, you know, they can't legally hold onto them, although I think the quota system has changed. But you're absolutely right. I mean, we don't have the capacity to, on a moment's notice, get an army of volunteers to cut and fillet fish, because when we do get a call from, say, a commercial fisheries, and they have like several thousand pounds of fish, and it's sitting on a dock, and they don't want to, you know, hang on to it any longer because it's taking up space, there's no way that we can get volunteer power to go do that. So we have to, you know, work with a commercial business, a food processor that can cut and fillet it, and, you know, obviously, they'll try to make it as affordable as possible since we are a nonprofit, but certainly, you know, they can't afford to do it for free. So, you know, those are the types of situations that we're in. There's one last thing I do want to mention. I was doing research on this, and I came across this in the statute. And, you know, there seems to be some sort of implication, I think, or reference that there's a post-harvest type of a crop. So that, to me, and I'm no lawyer, obviously, indicates there is some sort of general acceptance of some processing for the crops, because it is in statute. So I'm not sure, which, you know, brings me back to our main point, why Senate Bill 62 would be necessary.
Okay. Would post-harvest, would that be more of a gleaning operation, I would think?
Yeah.
Okay, that's after the harvest is done, the gleaners come in and pick up what's left. That's post-harvest. That's different from processing.
Mr. Chair, so just to kind of clarify, the situation in which somebody makes a donation of processed food to the food bank, I mean, that can still happen. You just can't claim the credit, right? I mean, you could give the salmon if it was processed. Yeah. You couldn't get a credit.
Right.
So, Chair Olson, if I may, Senator Denbro. So one of the things about the crop donation tax credit that's important to recognize is a lot of farmers, they do what's called cash accounting. And because they do cash accounting, they're not eligible to avail themselves of the federal deduction. Now, a lot of food processors are doing accrual accounting, so therefore they're eligible for the federal deduction. So a lot of processed food donors have some sort of, you know, tax benefit on the federal side. And so, you know, there is that sort of aspect that's covered in terms of encouraging that charitable sort of activity to take place. And obviously the Congress recently, and if you haven't been paying attention, obviously we have, we've been pushing to extend that tax deduction. But on the state side, when we're talking about farmers, when they're on, you know, on a cash accounting basis, the tax credit is the only thing, which is why I think, again, you know, when we're talking about Senate Bill 62, it just adds another hurdle for a farmer in terms of their desire for to donate.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, Katie, you must have some knowledge of who proponents of this bill would be.
So, Chair Olson, Senator Mona Sanderson, we've actually had a lot of questions about where the bill came from as well, because we haven't had a tax year where we've even been able to assess, you know, who's utilizing it and who's not. So I think all of us up here are as curious as the committee on the origin of the legislation.
Could, Chair, could you ask if there's anyone in the audience?
Yeah, well, she's here from Illinois.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. Yeah, we'll bring them up after this panel's done.
Oh, usually we have the proponents first. That's why I'm so confused. Okay, cool.
Okay. Any other questions? This panel. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Would you like to come up again? You wouldn't like to. I know you wouldn't, but you're going to come in.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Deanna Mack with the Department of Revenue, not the Legislative Revenue Office. There's a common, people are confused about that with for us, but we administer this tax credit, and I can give you a little bit of history on where it comes from. It originated in 1999, I believe, and it was at the time called the Crop Gleaner Credit, and it was for farmers to donate the food that was left over from harvest. And a couple of years later, they came in and they said, we are actually not be able to sell everything that we take to our farmers markets, and we'd like to sell the leftovers and donate the leftovers from the farmers markets. And that's how it stood for a lot of years until it was, I think in 2009 it was allowed to expire, and it came back in 2013. So it's largely in the same form that it has been for the last decade. This question is a new question about what is defined as a crop. And the statute, if you look to the statute that is actually not in your bill, it's the statute of definitions for this crop donation credit. It leaves a little to be desired as far as what we define as a crop. And Mr. Kennedy Wong contacted the Department of Revenue several months ago and asked us that question. We said, well, it's really not clear. Historically, it's been a crop gleaner type of credit, and that's how we've interpreted it in the past. Nothing's changed other than the percentage. I believe that there was some conversation with legislative counsel, and I know I talked with Chris Alanak at Legislative Revenue Office about what is a crop, and it's very, very broad, or could be interpreted very, very broadly. So we wanted to just have the conversation with the policymakers. What do you intend to have as a crop? Given its history, given the breadth of where it's shifted from over the last decade, it sounds like it shifted to more of an actual donation. And where's the line? I mean, does grapes turn into grape juice or wine? I mean, where is the line drawn? And I think that's the point that they're making, too. Where do you draw that line? We don't believe that as an agency we should be adopting an administrative rule to define that, because it's beyond an interpretive point of the statute. And so we would like to ask the legislature to actually make that call. I mean, what do you want us to do as far as this credit goes? I know Chris has had conversations with legislative counsel. I haven't. I don't think I have. But you have, if you want to speak to their concerns.
The conversations that I've had with legislative counsel were basically, well, what should the bill look like? And they were running into some deadlines.
Chris, would you state your name again?
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
You'd think I'd be familiar with the process. Chris Alanak, Legislative Revenue Office. And so the language, running into deadlines and managing workloads, it was just an issue of processing, because that was really the core issue and the definition of processing. So the question before the committee is probably better suited to the statute on the definition and just putting some clarification in that statute about what is the definition of a crop, lining up with what the committee intends.
Right. But also, Chris, don't we need to add in what is the definition of processed? Because that's not defined.
Chair Olson, that language came from conversations that I had with Ledge Council about, okay, well, it's kind of a nebulous definition here. At what stage in the process? There's very much a continuum. You have the cleaning, the examples that you heard, all the way down to wine or ice cream or any other kind of processed, highly processed food. Mm-hmm. And so I would suggest that the committee not get too hung up on the language that's in the drafted bill. It's really the larger concept of asking the legislature for clarification on what you mean by crop. So I don't know. My thought right now, kind of hearing all of this, is that the definition of crop might be the best way to go, but that would be you know, further discussions. And there could be challenges on where that line gets drawn in that, in the all of the stages of processing.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in that statute that Chris refers to, it's ORS 315.154. It's not in your bill. It's the preceding statute to the bill that's being amended, the statute that's being amended. And it does talk about what a crop is. It does say that it means an agricultural crop producing food for human consumption and includes, but is not limited to, bedding plants that produce food, orchard stock intended for the production of food, and livestock that may be processed into food for human consumption. So it does address the livestock component of it, but it's the rest of the food that is not really addressed.
So I'm going to ask a question. They mentioned the fact that it has been processed, but in our law we have no definition of process. So we assume we would go to Webster and use the definition of process out of Webster, right?
Mr. Chair, I think we would, Webster's third, yes, I think that's what the courts look to in definitions. And it would be the usual definition, except this is modified to include that it must be for human consumption. So it's beyond just slaughter. It's actually, it needs to be able to be eaten.
Senator Morris Anderson.
I'm just curious as to why then this bill came to this committee. Why didn't it go to the Ag Committee? I mean, we don't have an Ag. What is that, natural resources?
I think it should have gone to health care. No, isn't this a food issue?
Or judiciary. There's a lot of places it could go. We should be able to get this.
No, just to follow up on that, I mean, regarding working with the Ag community is extremely important in this matter, and at least I haven't worked with the ag community very much at all, except pick berries when I was little. But I feel that whoever is working with definitions of ag and crops, et cetera, there's got to be a committee that it's more suitable to, that would understand this issue. Just a thought.
Senator Cruz?
Well, I'm not sure. Okay, crop. I pick a plum, I dry it, and it becomes a prune. Is it, but the crop was a plum. The finished product's a prune. I mean, you can get into that level of subtlety in this stuff. So, I think we want to stop short of Lay's potato chips, but...
From a plum?
That takes a lot of processing.
Or GMO.
Yeah, yeah.
No, we're not doing that.
I'm not sure that. I just think we need to get some folks together and see what we can come up definitionally to get at the spirit of what we're trying to do here. And I don't want to prevent any ag producer from being able to contribute and get credit for his contribution. The purpose is to get food to people, for God's sakes, okay? The purpose is pretty straightforward, so...
I think that the core of the question is the plum or the potato chips, as much clarity as could be provided to the Department of Revenue.
Right. We could get into what you can do with SNAP and all that stuff, but we won't do that in this committee, okay?
I think there's another bill.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. Mr. Byer, would you like to come up and testify?
Well, now it's going to get really confusing.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Roger Byer, here representing Oregon Dairy Farmers and Oregon Blueberry Commission. So appreciate the discussion on the bill. And just for the record, we don't eat Christmas trees, so I'm not here, although sometimes we probably should.
Well, I ate a couple this year, just so you'll know.
Okay,
so.
Well, that's not good to hear. 315.154 has a definite definition of crop in it. And so crop means an agricultural crop producing food for human consumption and includes, but is not limited to, bedding plants that produce food, orchard stock intended for the production of food, and livestock that may be processed into food for human consumption. I guess I don't understand the problem we're trying to fix. There is a definition of crop in the statute. It's pretty inclusive. If you need a definition, it's probably, maybe as Senator Cruz said, what it's processing. But for the Oregon dairy farmers, you have to send the milk to a processor before you can get a crop donation tax credit for it. You cannot do it any other way. For blueberries, those are an extremely perishable crop. Many blueberry growers have on-farm processing facilities. They do sell fresh market, but that fresh market crop is normally always packaged and chilled prior to being, even if it's fresh market, and then many times it's frozen, and the frozen product is donated. So if you have a too narrow of definition of processing, you are going to just limit the amount of food that people will be willing to donate for this small tax credit. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we think the discussion on this tax credit should focus on the percent, not on the definitions. It is limited to 15%. Last session, when that bill passed, we felt it should have been much higher, like 25%, and we would have more food going into the food bank and other appropriate agencies or organizations to distribute. So there is a definition of crop. I think it's a pretty good definition already in statute. We don't understand the origins of this bill, and if you want to talk about this bill in total, let's talk about the percentage, not the definitions. Happy to answer any questions.
I would just like to clarify. I think the discussion is around Section 1, Number 2, a credit is not allowed for any portion of a crop that has been processed.
I understand what the bill says. Yes.
Yeah, therein lies the discussion.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the clarification. I guess I forgot to include my clients are opposed to the bill as printed.
I'm a little concerned with the definition, Roger, because quite simply it says egg products or processed meat. It doesn't say so that definitionally you're saying it's okay to process meat, but by exclusion, are you saying it's not okay to process other quote-unquote edible products? I may be getting too fine in this, but...
Mr. Chair and Senator Cruz, I appreciate that, but I would go back to the term that's included. It includes, but is not
limited to. Okay. Good point.
And I did have this conversation with the Legislative Revenue Office in the context of the bill last session, and milk, whether or not milk would be included in that, because milk is not livestock, but it is food. So at that point in time, at least between Chris and I, we came to the conclusion that it would be included in that current definition.
And what about those excess fish then? Would they be excluded under the definition?
Mr. Chair, not being an expert on fish, but fish is, considered an agricultural crop in the state of Oregon.
Yes, it is.
So I think it would be included.
Good. Senator Moe Sanderson? I see a question.
I don't know how to ask it, really. I think that what we want to define here is how much processing,
I can't agree with a credit is not allowed for any portion that has been processed, because from what the committee says, there's a whole different level of processing all the way through. So you don't think that we could have a better definition of how processed, if we put a better definition of process? I don't know.
I think we just eliminated the addition to the bill and focused on percentage, we'd be just fine.
Mr. Chair, to Senator Monter Sanderson's question, I hear what you're saying, and I understand that some people may want to define what is processing. But what I heard from the testimony of the people just in front of me is that they said that we need a better definition of crop. And I was just wanted to point out, crop, I think, is pretty well defined. If you need a definition, if someone needs a definition of what is processing and what is not, or how much to be allowed for processing, I think all of the opponents to this bill as drafted are willing to have that conversation. Recognize we don't have much data right now because this just came back into... Okay. For the last tax year, which people are just now filing their taxes. So
okay.
It may be premature to have that discussion, but we're not afraid to have that discussion.
It's true.
You know, here's a good point.
Oh, my turn.
Oh, it's your turn. I'm sorry.
I do think that's kind of what we're talking about as being needed, is to have that sort of sit down and figure out, you know, what really is consistent with the intent of this bill. Because I do agree with Ms. Mack, as I look back to our discussions last year, we were mainly, or whenever it was, 2013, we were talking about a kind of something, maybe not gleaning, but, you know, something more like that, you know, excess crop. I don't remember us really thinking about this as being a credit for process, you know, for all donations. And, you know, certainly I'd be willing to revisit that conversation, and maybe that's what this bill would do. But I think people have to sit down and have a conversation. I mean, I think we'd all agree, if we're talking about shelling peanuts or we're talking about grinding wheat into flour, you know, because obviously you can't, otherwise it's just not usable, you know, those kinds of things. I think that is consistent with what we intended when we passed this legislation. Potato chips, probably not. You know, so just some clarity on where you draw the line.
I have no problem with that, Michael, but it's more of, you know, we're changing definitions before we've even got any life into the program or any length on the program to see where.
Right, but that's because they don't know how to implement the program. It's the, you know, where do they draw the line as to what constitutes a crop?
It'd be interesting to know if anybody who thought they were a crop were denied, I guess, would be the question.
Pardon?
Are you done with meat?
If you'd like to be. But this program has run in the past, correct? And stopped, and then was restarted, correct?
Right.
So Mr. Chair, that is correct.
We have all the fundamentals. Right now we're just debating semantics. What's process?
Well, I guess, which is my point, you know, what was there a problem before that needed to be fixed? That's the question, but definitionally. And if there wasn't, then why are we changing definitions?
Mr. Chair, I'm not qualified to answer that question.
That's Deanna.
I mean, I think that's a legitimate question.
Deanna, we're calling on you. Thank you, Mr. Beyer.
Thank you.
We're calling on you again. You weren't planning on this. You just stopped in to rest, right?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Deanna Mack with Department of Revenue again. And I think that the discussion you're having right now is exactly why we're having this conversation today. It's because the proponents of the bill came to the Department of Revenue and said, what is a crop? This has been reinstated. And I said, and my exact response back was, well, what did you say it was in the past? Because this has been in place since 1999.
Right.
The statute has not changed. It's a certified credit. The person who receives the crop donation needs to certify that they've received it for us. And so we were a little befuddled, I guess, to say what the crop is. So then we started looking at the statute, and as the gentleman before me read, and I pointed out earlier, it says that agricultural crop is a list of things, but it's not limited to those things. So it's exceptionally broad. So where do, as an administrative agency, it's outside of our scope to interpret what you mean by that in an administrative rule. Now, if you had history, legislative history, that explained what you intended, we would be fine with adopting an administrative rule that captured that legislative history. But it's not there. The history talks about gleaning, and it's ancient. It's old history. And the last conversation was about bringing it back, raising the percentage to different percentage levels. We didn't have this conversation, and so that's why our agency isn't comfortable just doing this by administrative rule, but would prefer that you folks have a conversation about what you intend and whether it does mean, you know, milk that's turned into ice cream or eggs, or I mean, where is that line drawn? And that's what we hope you can tell us.
Yes.
So, historically on this thing, I raise something, I don't care what it is, and I donate it to the food bank, okay? I get the paperwork from them. I submit that. Is that basically the gold standard for you, as long as the paperwork's there?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, that's correct. If the certifying agency or certifying right. entity tells us that this person is allowed to have this credit, then they're allowed to have that credit.
Okay.
They often look to us for guidance on our interpretation of this tax law, and I think that's what happened in this case.
Okay.
And my question back was the same one you're having, is what has changed in the last few years. I think there's just more people interested in using it, and maybe they haven't, maybe there's, it's a broader category of people that are interested in donating, and that's my speculation. I don't know why it's come up this time around.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Dimmer.
Yes. In its previous version, you know, before it went away in 2009, what kinds of crops were included then? I mean, was processed food, lightly processed food, let's call it that way, crops?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dembro, the crops that I recall talking to practitioners about, and I've been involved in this program since it's started, and since it was changed from a true crop gleaner to the farmer's market component, it was always the leftover produce that was slightly marred or damaged and not marketable, but still edible. Right, bruised, damaged, but leftover from the market at the end of the day, and they take it to the food bank and donate it. But that's been 10 years ago, and I haven't really followed it since then. I've been in different tax programs, but that was the original types of products, and that's what we've always advised people in the past.
Well, I would suggest a pancake mix isn't damaged. Well, obviously it's crushed, but that's a whole other thing. From your perspective, are things unclear and you're not quite sure where you should be going for certification? Is that part of the problem here?
Chair Olson and members of the committee for record, Philip Kennedy Wong, representing Oregon Food Bank. This whole process began when we had growers that had questions for us as a food bank as to whether or not, this type of crop, was eligible or not. And, we certainly didn't, see ourselves as the Department of Revenue being the authority as far as what is a crop or not in terms of the legal definition. I mean, certainly we have our professional definition, and there's a lot of nuance to that, as you can imagine. I would suggest that perhaps we, the Oregon Food Bank and the other regional food banks in Oregon, would work closely with Department of Revenue to help flesh out various sort of scenarios to which we are more familiar with, that we would feel comfortable in saying in our work this is considered a crop. But having said that as well, I mean, certainly I think going back to what Ms. Mack said as far as a farmer's market, I think you could also make the case by virtue of any crop that was taken to a farmer's market had some degree of processing. So I think there is some sort of general acceptance as crops having some processing being eligible, and certainly it's always going to be on a case-by-case basis, which is going to be, I know, a difficult thing to sort of administer for any kind of state agency. I mean, there are certain types of nuts that you can't eat raw. It has to be roasted. There are certain types of, like bushels of wheat. We can't mill wheat ourselves. So there are always going to be those case-by-case basis. I mean, we do get large quantities of, frozen green beans that come in these big, big boxes, and we have to have, volunteers come and repack them, put them into, small size containers, and we certainly would, have had even legislators help repack those green beans. But that kind of gives you a sense. I mean, certainly we would be more than happy to work with Department of Revenue and Department of Agriculture to help work out whatever, and also the agricultural community at large as to what would make the most sense for moving forward on this. But our position still remains the same. I think Senate Bill 62 is a premature sort of conversation.
I would agree.
Any other questions?
Katie,
Would you like to come up? Do you raise your hand? You have a question?
Again, for the record, Katie Fass with the Farm Bureau. Just to kind of wrap up this conversation, I just want to remind you all that when you read the statute, these are tax credits for growers of crops, for the crop that they're donating. And so it is really, I think we would admit, not intended for cracker processors or chip processors, but this is really, I mean, the statute talks about a grower of a crop that is donating that crop to. It may have to be lightly processed. But when you start talking about processing, I don't know if there's a way to define it that the pancakes, the wheat going into the pancakes, will still qualify, and also the prunes that you're drying will so I think from our, we're happy to have a conversation to ensure that the intent of the bill is there, but we also are very concerned about looking for a problem that we don't really believe exists.
Right. But the difference between a pancake mix and a potato chip isn't really that far.
I don't believe that there is a way to define that.
Separate, yeah, right.
Correct. Yeah,
that level of processing is relatively probably on the same level.
But you have to remember that the way the statute's lined up, that crop value tax credit percentage goes back to the grower. And I think that is the way that the rules should be written. And there's probably a way to get there where the legislation isn't needed.
Chair Olson and Senator Cruz, a word about the pancake mix. We get what might be called byproducts of another product that a processor or grower is trying to make, and the byproduct that's unusable sometimes still have value in terms of human consumption, but in terms of by itself, it's not a marketable sort of item. So it'd be like having a second quality, cucumber or something like that. So in that particular case, the wheat growers said, look, we have this byproduct of milled wheat that could be actually easily turned into pancake mix. Otherwise, this byproduct is going to go straight to the dumpster. There are cases like that where, like, for example, another good one is we're working with some dairy farmers, and they have some byproduct, which is some type of cream, but it's not edible in that sort of form. It's been skimmed off, but it needs to be processed in order to be converted into something that's, easily consumable, i.e. like drinkable milk. I mean, there's plenty of examples like that where we're working with the industry from growers to retailers to processors when they do have those types of odds and ends of food products that we can salvage them. I mean, a good example is, we definitely do get a lot of second grade produce, marred by, a hailstorm. There's a lot of these variations for it. And we certainly, from our experience, we do feel confident, and we can, work with the grower and the Department of Revenue to say, look, in our experience, we would look at this as a crop under the intent of Senate Bill 1541 from 2014 and, the prior statute that existed on the books.
Any other questions? Any other comments? Or would anybody else like to testify?
Away.
Okay, I think I will close the Senate bill hearing on Senate Bill 62. And we will open the public hearing on Senate Bill 41. We'll have a staff summary.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 41 extends the sunset for tax credits for elderly or permanently and totally disabled. This is another tax credit review bill with a subsequent referral to tax credits. I can put the background quickly on the record. It's simply a paraphrasing the legislative research report that Chris comes up and talks about. The tax credit for elderly or permanently disabled persons may be intended to provide financial assistance to lower-income elderly or disabled persons. Eligible taxpayers may claim both federal and state credits. The federal credit can be as much as $5,000 for single filers and $7,500 for joint filers. The amount of the state credit is 40% of the federal credit. This tax credit is currently claimed by fewer than 1,500 taxpayers each year and accounts for a total tax reduction that was about $20,000 in 2005 and grew to about $75,000 in 2012. The average tax reduction was roughly $55. And again, that's from the legislative revenue report, just to summarize for Chris, because we have no.
There's no one signed up to testify. Would anybody like to come up? Yes, sir, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center, and also here on behalf of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon Tax and Revenue Committee. Mr. Chair, if you allow me just a couple of general comments. We follow the whole issue of tax expenditures very closely. We've been engaged in this discussion since the early 90s when we worked on getting the first tax expenditure report. We worked on the process that you're all engaged in now, where substantive committees take a look at expiring tax credits, make decisions about what policy issues pertain, and then referring them down to the Joint Tax Committee. The Human Services Coalition has taken positions on three tax credits favorably: the child and dependent care, the working family tax credit, and the IDA, individual development accounts. The rest of them were either neutral about or just basically saying that a number of them may need a refocusing, a combination, looking at ways to achieve the same results by spending through the budget. We have been testifying at various committees about where things stand with the co-chair's budget. As you all well know, the co-chair's allocated $14 million for $64 million in expiring tax credits. So the Joint Tax Credit Committee has quite a job on its hands. If all of those are sent down to the Joint Tax Committee to say, you make the decisions about what gets funded. There are many tax credits that come up over the years that have a good purpose in mind, and they may have outlived their purpose, or they may need to be retooled just to make sure that they're consistent with what we're doing in the state of Oregon now. So, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make a general comment about it. I just wanted to let the committee know about which tax credits we are supporting as the Human Services Coalition, but also recognize that all of you have a very difficult job when you're looking at all of these things, because they all do have some merit. The question is always about efficiency, effectiveness, and what we can afford. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When someone, a disabled person or the elderly, they want this tax credit, can they do a short form and file their taxes on a short form and be able to get this tax credit? Maybe that's more of a question.
Mr. Chair, I will defer to the experts in the room.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Chris Allenack, Legislative Revenue Office. Are you referring to the federal short form?
Well, I'm not sure. Yeah. Well,
generally speaking, they can't use the short form.
Right. So I'm wondering if the reason the elderly and the disabled, they don't take advantage of this is because they don't feel they have to fill out a longer tax form. I don't know.
Possibly, but nowadays with electronic filing, the long form is almost the default form anyway. And the short form, the Oregon short form, we don't even have anymore.
Okay.
We have just the 1040, and then there's a part year non-resident.
Yeah, I just know that having had to do taxes for my father in his latest years, you know, if I hadn't come forward, I'm not quite sure if there would have been. I mean, he kept saying he could fill out the forms, but I'm afraid there isn't enough wherewithal on being able to take advantage of a tax credit if he were eligible. So it's too bad we can't make this simpler for those who would really benefit from it but I'm not sure that's in the cards, right?
Well, that could be the situation, and that could be the case for a number of the tax credits that are on the books in terms of a marketing aspect and making sure that everybody who is eligible for the tax credit knows that it's there and uses it. We do know there are a number of tax credits or subtractions that require some sort of certification. Mm-hmm. And for even people who go through a certification, we know a fair number of them do not use the credit or the subtraction, and they've gone through the certification. So it's not unusual to find.
Okay.
And we're not really sure why. I don't have good answers for why they don't use them.
How much is this per? It's based on how much income they make.
There is an income threshold there. It's 40% of the federal credit.
Okay.
And I think the average was about $55 in terms of what was used.
Senator Denbrough.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Actually, this is a question for you, John. I mean, you know, on the one hand, we're going to have to decide whether or not to send this on to the Joint Committee. And on the one hand, you know, it's currently $75,000. That's, you know, just a real drop in the bucket, you know, as we're trying to extend tax credits. But on the other hand, you know, the average tax reduction was $55. And so what kind of good is that doing? I guess that's the question. And I know, so your organization is kind of neutral on this in terms of whether or not it should be funded, but I wonder if you could just say something about, give us your thoughts on, you know, the program as a program.
Mr. Chair, Senator Denbrough, this is one, as we looked at this along with some of the others that relate to disability, that we know from a little bit more, because Chris Allenack has done some sleuthing as to where these things came from. But I just think it may be an example of a tax credit that's outlived its usefulness. And if there's an interest to provide services to elderly and people with disabilities, there may be more targeted ways of doing that through the budget. One other thing that I would just very quickly mention as an example of something that you did to retool a tax credit relating to elderly people was the senior medical deduction. Human Services Coalition was actually quite supportive of making that change, which did a couple of things. It moved it from a deduction to a subtraction so that more people, lower income people, could participate, but then capped the amount and also then put a cap on the upper limits of income that people could claim that. So I think that's a good example of taking a look at tax policy and saying, how can we direct this tax credit that we have to have a more of a beneficial effect on the populations we're hoping to give the most of a break to. So in terms of all of these rather small tax credits, and there are a number of them that are up for review, it sort of begs the question about, are they meeting efficiently and effectively the purpose that they were intended to? And I apologize if that's a long way around with answering that question. And if I did not answer your question, I'd be happy to do my best.
No, that's a very fair statement. You know, I mean, as I look at this, it looks as if we're doing something and we can feel good about doing something with this credit, but it's really not doing a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, if we were to vote to end it, would people then say we're taking negative, harmful action to low-income disabled? I hope not.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Denbrough, one of the parts, the features of changing senior medical, to use that again as an example, is that we secured agreements as AARP and Human Services Coalition backed this effort to say that at least half of the savings needed to be invested back in programs for seniors and people with disabilities. And the legislature has kept its word, and the co-chair's budget, they talk about continuing that trend. So it's a matter of, in other words, there were people that were adversely affected. I know in my own household I was able to I also enjoyed the experience of having less to be able to utilize for reducing my taxes, but I felt it was fair, and so I was happy about that. But I know a number of people, whenever you make any changes to tax policy, unfortunately, there wind up being winners and losers. I certainly sympathize if you get phone calls about this, if you make a change with this, but I certainly think that it's one that is ripe for some discussion about how can we best help seniors, and maybe this is not the way to do it.
Thank you. Any other questions? And would anyone else like to testify on Senate Bill 41? If not, I'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 41, and I will close the Committee on Human Services and Early Childhood. There's got to be a word after early childhood. There just has to be. There's got to be a word after early childhood. There just has to be. There's